98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
The top stories of the day at 4 o'clock every day here on the Burns and Gambo show. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. We start our rundown of the top stories with news from the Arizona Cardinals. And a hearty congratulations to Gambo's favorite player on the Arizona Cardinals, Buda Baker. Named first-team All-Pro safety, joining Mika Fitzpatrick and Tyrann Mathieu. Those three players comprise the first-team All-Pro safeties. It's not the first time that he has been named an All-Pro. He was a first-team special teams player during his rookie season. But to make it in his natural position of safety, I'm sure, is a moment of real pride for him. Wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins was named to the second team All-Pro today. He was the leading vote getter on the second team. Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, and Tyreek Hill were the first team wide receivers today.
118 tackles, 90 solo, 2 interceptions, 7 tackles for a loss all over the field. Such a great player. Love watching him play. The leader of that defense, number 32, man. He is fantastic.
Yeah, congratulations to him. Congratulations to both of them. Some believe Hopkins should have been on that first team, but it's hard to argue with Adams, Diggs, and Tyreek Hill. There were a couple of other Cardinals who also got mentions. Hassan Reddick got a couple of votes as an edge rusher. Ezekiel Turner got 4 votes as a special teamer. Dennis Gardette got 1 vote as a special teamer as well. NFL playoffs begin this weekend. Here is your lineup on Saturday. The Colts and the Bills, that's the first game at 11 o'clock in the morning. The Rams and the Seahawks then at 2:45 in the afternoon. And the Buccaneers versus Washington tomorrow night at about 6:15. Then on Sunday, it's Ravens-Titans, followed by Bears-Saints. And the nightcap on Sunday, Browns-Steelers. Gambo, what's the game you're looking forward to the most out of those 6?
Oh, that's a good one. The game I'm looking forward to, and I like the AFC games a lot better. So give me the Baltimore-Tennessee game.
Okay, I think that's probably the one I would choose as well. I think that's the one I'm looking forward to the most. I think the next most interesting game is probably Rams-Seahawks because I'm just really not sure who's going to win that game. But obviously the expanded playoffs kicks in this week with the extra wild card teams and the 2 extra wild card games, and that's why we have that. Sad news for Major League Baseball today. Former Dodgers manager Tommy Lasorda, a superstar really as managers go in the sport, one of the most recognizable personalities in the sport's history, passed away at the age of 93 today, managed the Dodgers for 20 years. He won 2 World Series titles, 4 National League pennants, 8 division crowns, and lived long enough to see the Dodgers win a World Series before he passed.
Yeah, I'm looking at the coverage in the LA Times. Dodgers, great, Tommy Lasorda dies. What are your memories of the legendary Tommy Lasorda? I always like reading that things. People, you know, putting in all their memories of what it was like, what they remember about him. But, you know, he was the face of the Dodgers franchise for a long, long time. And he was always a great interview. And I've talked to him. I've had him on the show. I don't know if it was with you or somebody else, but I've had him on the show. And he's always just fun to talk to. Love the game of baseball. And yeah, he was that face of the franchise for the Dodgers for so many years.
A huge, huge personality in a sport that often doesn't have a lot of personality, if we're going to be honest with you. I mean, it's not a sport filled with the most personable guys, or at least the big kind of fill-up-a-room personalities. Boy, Tommy Lasorda could fill up a room with his personality, no doubt about it. One quick note from college football. We mentioned a moment ago about the college football championship game being on for Monday night. Everybody's passed their COVID tests. This note also from college football. Jim Harbaugh, the head coach of Michigan, has reached a contract extension to remain Michigan's football coach through the 2025 season. There was some speculation that this might come to an end, but Harbaugh has re-upped with Michigan, and he will be back, Gambo.
Wow. I thought I saw something about Ohio State trolling Michigan by liking the tweet about Jim Harbaugh's contract extension. That Ohio State
that
liked
might
it.
That might be the case. That's possible. That's very possible.
They're like, yeah. They're like, do you know what that guy's record is against us? Harbaugh is 0-5 against Ohio State. They've been outscored 221 to 126. 221 to 126, 0-5. I'd like to tweet, too, if I was running the Ohio State Twitter account. You're going to re-sign Jim Harbaugh? Yeah, I'll take it.
That story's true. Ohio State football's Twitter account liked a tweet from Bleacher Report announcing the Jim Harbaugh.
Dude, this is so funny. I don't blame them. I don't blame them. They have lost to the – his Wolverines have lost by double digits to the Buckeyes in every matchup they've played. Yes, yeah. They want to keep Jim Harbaugh. Sure, keep him. Go ahead.
They like it. They are Mikey very, likes very it. Happy with that. But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo show once again revolves around the Phoenix Suns, and once again revolves around this concept of the Suns kind of achieving this state now where we have just come to look forward really very much so to every single game they play. And today is no different. They start the beginning of a three-game road trip. They're in Detroit taking on the Pistons, one of the worst teams so far to start this season, not just in terms of their record, but just about every other number that goes along with it. This everything about this game presents itself as what should be a very easy win for the Suns, which is what makes it so interesting. Has this team evolved to the position where they can count on easy wins in games like this, Gambo? That's kind of the storyline for tonight, isn't it?
Let's find out. This team's going nowhere. The Pistons are terrible. They're going to get to the point where they're going to try to get something for Derrick Rose and maybe Blake Griffin and play their younger guys. They've got a bunch of young players that they like, and they're going to try to rely on and try to build around. Sadiq Bey, who they drafted, Killian Hayes, who's out right now, the 19-year-old, Wright, Jeremy Grant, who's more of a veteran, but they're going to build around those guys, try to move Blake Griffin, try to move Derrick Rose, try to get something for those guys, because at 1-7, they're not going anywhere. So this will be a test for the Suns. I don't expect them to lose the game, but this will be a test. You put a team away like this early, they may fold like a cheap suit. And that's what you got to do. You play Indiana tomorrow, you got a back-to-back, put the emphasis on beating this team up, resting some guys in the fourth quarter, maybe even in the third, so that way they could play tomorrow. But this is one of those games where we will find out. I mean, are the Suns the type of team that are going to step on your throat and annihilate you? Are they the type of team that are going to play to the level of the competition and kind of let the Pistons hang around for a little bit? I think this is one of those barometers. I think we'll find that out. I don't expect them to lose. You never know. But I think the key test is, do they blow them out and step on their throats, or do they let the Pistons hang around a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, style points shouldn't matter much in a game like this, but I think for this team and where they're at right now in their evolution, style points do matter a little bit. And I especially when it's, three games in four nights, and it's East Coast, and it's a road trip, fatigue is bound to set in a little bit. It would be very, very nice to give yourself a really nice, comfortable lead and be able to selectively rest some guys in the second half of tonight's game when you're playing a team this bad. That might set you up, because tomorrow on this road trip, you're playing the Indiana Pacers. Now, I don't know if the Pacers are going to be there when it's all said and done. They're off to a very, very good start so far. They've been one of the surprisingly better basketball teams in the NBA so far to start this year. You'd like to go into that game as full strength as you possibly can, and on the second night of a back-to-back, having that kind of rest would go a long way. Now, Dwayne Casey just announced moments ago that Josh Jackson, the former member of the Suns organization, is going to test his ankle on the court right before the game and see how it feels. Last night in the injury report released by the Pistons, they listed Josh Jackson as being probable for the game along with Derrick Rose. So it seems like the expectation is that he will play. But they aren't sure until he goes out there and tests that ankle pregame before they know for sure whether he's going to play.
Yeah, but they've got, Blake Griffin missed a couple of games because of concussion protocol. He still hasn't gotten his legs under him. He was 2-9 against the Bucks the other night, 0-6 from the field. He hasn't played well. Killian Hayes, he's out. He tore his labrum in his hip. Josh Jackson's having that ankle issue. Derrick Rose left Wednesday's game with a right knee contusion. They're banged up. But then the other thing is, man, you look how bad they are. This is their worst start since 2012. Their defense is near the bottom in almost every category. Field goal percentage, points per game, defensive rating. And their offense isn't any better either. Their offense is 29th in field goal percentage. So they They lack continuity. They've got injuries. This is a team that, you know, I want to see the Suns. I mean, I want to see them step on their throat. I want to see a first round knockout. I don't want to see you let them keep the Pistons in this fight for a little bit. Phoenix is riding high, man. You're playing well. You're coming off of an off day, so this isn't a back to back. This team, you know, this is the type of team that they know they're going to be trading these guys, and they know they're going to be rebuilding with. They had 3 first round draft picks last year, and they're playing all those guys. Hayes got and hurt, but they're playing a bunch of young kids.
And if memory serves, this will be the first time, assuming he does play, this will be the first time Josh Jackson will have played against his former organization, because I believe he was with the G League in all 4 games last year. I don't think he's played against the Suns. I'll have to go back and check for sure, but I think, assuming he's healthy enough to go, that this would be Josh Jackson's first game against the organization that infamously traded him away. So that'll be something to watch tonight as well. The game starts at 5 o'clock. We'll keep you completely updated here on the Burns and Gambo Show. But when we come back, the NFL playoffs have arrived. Wild card weekend, expanded wild card weekend with 2 extra games. We take a look at the NFC and what we expect to be talking about on Monday next on the Burns and Gambo Show. 6 NFL playoff games this weekend, 3 in the AFC, 3 in the NFC, and rather than separate them by day, we're looking at them by conference. So with that in mind, the 3 NFC games coming up this weekend, the Rams visiting the Seattle Seahawks, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers visiting the 7-9 Washington football team, of course, winners of the NFC East, which is why they got in with that 7-9 record. And then on Sunday afternoon, the Bears taking on the Saints. And if you're just going by expectations, Gambo, it seems fairly safe to say that the best game of these 3 in terms of its closeness, probably the Rams and the Seahawks, right? I don't know if people are really expecting that much out of Washington against Tampa or Chicago against New Orleans. But the Rams-Seahawks, especially depending on the quarterback situation, kind of feels like a bit of a toss-up there in that game.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably the game that has the best chance of being a competitive game. I think Seattle's defense, you know, halfway through the season, they turned it around. And their offense is, you know, still very good. But they were averaging 34 points per game the first 8 games. And then they're averaging 23 points per game in the last 8. So there's been a little bit of the less explosive plays. The deep game hasn't been as much for them. So I think the offense took a little bit of a step down, but the defense took a big step up. Remember, Russell Wilson, he looked like an MVP candidate. He was throwing the ball all over the field. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and David Moore, and they were really, really humming along. They ended up as the 3 seed. They won 12 games. I think they're a Super Bowl contender. I think they are. I think that Green Bay is the favorite. A lot of people like New Orleans, and I can see that too. But I think Seattle will get by the Rams, but I would imagine that it depends on who's plays, right? We don't know if Goff's playing or Johnny Walford's playing. I think that either way they get by the Rams.
Yeah, here's McVay, and I'll give the Rams credit. We were talking about this game on Wednesday, and I remember at the time thinking there's no way on earth they're going to be able to keep this a secret, that eventually word will leak who their starting quarterback is going to be. Credit to the Rams. So far, they've been able to keep it a pretty tight-lipped secret.
Yeah, I mean, we're taking it a day at a time. Jared is our starting quarterback, and you know the reality is that he had a thumb surgery. We're monitoring that every single day, and that's something that we're taking a day at a time. But the anticipation is both those guys are getting themselves ready to go.
Oh, man, Seattle is just so tough to figure. They're so tough to figure because I know the pedigree is there. I know the success that they seem to have every single year. Russell Wilson has just not looked like the same guy the second half of the season, and yet that Seattle defense has not looked like the same defense that it was from the first half of the season when they were so bad. And so who Seattle is and how they win this football game, it's hard for me to know for sure because they've just been such a fundamentally different-looking football team from the first half of the season when Russell Wilson was an MVP candidate, but that defense was god-awful, to the second half of the season when the defense has been really good and Russell Wilson's just looked okay. I'm not really sure who they are, and I definitely don't know what quarterback they're going to be facing against the Rams, so it really makes this game kind of tough to figure. I think Seattle wins it, but I'm not very confident about it, I can tell you that.
I feel pretty confident about it. Now, listen, that Rams, you know, Aaron Donald and that defensive front, but I think Russell Wilson's ability to escape the pocket and make some plays, I think, is a big deal. I mean, Seattle's hoping that they'll have their safety, Jamal Adams, ready to go. He's such a big part of what they do. I think Seattle's on a little bit of a roll, and even with no fans, you know, they're at home. I would say that if you're looking for close games, I would think that this would be, you know, be one of those close games. But I just think that the Rams with Brockers is back. He's off the COVID list. But I just think without Jared Goff, and Johnny Wolford did a couple of nice things against the Cardinals, but if he has to be the quarterback on this football team, I just don't see it, Burnsy.
Yeah. The game that night on Saturday night is NFC game number 2, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Washington football team. Washington, one of the best stories in the league this year. There's zero debate about it between Ron Rivera beating cancer the way he did while the season was going on, or Alex Smith coming back from that horrific leg injury, and what they were 4-1 with him as a starter. They were an awfully good story in winning that division. Whereas the Bucs, I think, go into this postseason with a little bit of pressure on them, right? I mean, this is the super team that Tom Brady kind of constructed. There's Antonio Brown and there's Rob Gronkowski. How good are they and how far will they get? Because a lot of that will justify the reasons why you went out and got Tom Brady was for this moment here. How far are they going to go?
Yeah, listen, the fact that they're here is a big thing, right? I mean, Brady left New England, moved to Florida, uprooted everything, left the Patriots. Tampa Bay had not been to the playoffs since 2007. It's been a long time, and he's got him there. It's one of the best offenses in the NFL. Over the last 4 weeks, they averaged 37 points per game. Brady's playing like he's younger. He's hitting all those downfield passes that Bruce Arians wants them to do. He threw for 40 touchdowns this year. Go look it up.
Great season.
He only did that. He only threw for more touchdown passes once in his entire career. His yards, fifth most in his career. So, like, you start to, you know, there was some debate about Brady earlier, but these last 4 or 5 games, man, they were clicking. They were scoring points left and right. 40 touchdowns this year. That's the second most in his entire career. His yards are fifth most. So there's a lot of things that were clicking with Brady. So, yeah, I think there's pressure on him. I don't know that they could go all the way. I don't know that they could go win in Green Bay. I would put them behind Seattle, New Orleans, and Green Bay. I would. I'd put them as the fourth best. But as we've seen with the NFC, this whole year, everything shifts. Yeah. This whole year, it kind of changes every couple of weeks.
Here is, of the 6 NFC teams going in action this weekend, from my money, the team that I believe in the least is the Chicago Bears. And here's our guy, Keyshawn Johnson on ESPN. He doesn't think the Bears even have a shot against the Saints.
They always have a chance to win, but it's not real. The New Orleans Saints are at home in the dome. And I think when you look at Drew Brees, who played well coming back last week and doing what he was supposed to do, they don't have Alvin Kamara in the lineup, but Taysom Hill is there. So you have that Swiss Army knife still available to you and see what happens with Michael Thomas. But I think overall, with the defense that New Orleans has been able to play this year and the offense at Mitch Trubisky and some of the things that they've done on the offensive side of the ball, they just won't have enough firepower to match point for point with New Orleans in this situation.
I don't disagree with Keyshawn on this one. I don't. This is the one game of all the 6 this weekend, and I could be totally wrong. This is the one game where if I've got errands to run, I'm probably running it during the Saints-Bears game. Now, I'm being serious. That's the game. Like if I got to go to Home Depot and get a brand new lawnmower, that's probably the game I'm going to Home Depot to get a brand new lawnmower for. I don't think this game is going to have much consequence this weekend, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, I don't believe in the Bears. They're here, okay. They went 8-8. They had a 6-game losing streak. Their defense is starting to fall apart now. They had some success with it. They haven't won, you know, in that stadium in, what I say, since like the 70s. It's been forever. If Alvin Kamara, who tested positive last Friday, if he's playing and Thomas is playing, the Bears are a big underdog, man. They got in. They clinched thanks to Arizona losing. But only one of Chicago's 8 wins this season, only one, came against a playoff team. They beat Tampa Bay in Week 5, 20-19. That was their only win against the playoff team. Matt Nagy's a good coach, but he's had the quarterback carousel, Trubisky to Foles, back to Trubisky. The Bears, once they made that decision, they went 5-1, but then they had the 6-game losing streak, and then they went back to Trubisky. I just think there's too many question marks on that football team. I don't think they're very good, and I think New Orleans is going to beat them up.
When we come back, the Phoenix Suns are sitting atop the Western Conference while one of their best players, their very best player, you could argue, has been struggling a little bit, and I use that word loosely. Should we be worried for any reason at all? We'll discuss it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. We're asking you to pick the biggest upsets this weekend in the NFL wildcard playoffs. And for that, we turn it back over to Sarah.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
We've got three choices on this one. There probably could have been a fourth, but who am I to quibble with the Twitter poll question of the day? I've learned my lesson from doing that in the past. Could have been a fourth.
You may quibble.
I may, yes. I may quibble, but I know what quibbling is going to get me. So what are the options here? What are the choices?
Okay, we've got three games for you to pick from, and we are looking for the matchup that is most likely to result in an upset in the NFL playoffs this weekend.
We like upsets.
What's that?
We do like upsets.
We like upsets.
Who doesn't love a good upset, right?
Unless
it's your team, I guess. But for those of us who don't have a team playing right now, hello, Cardinals fans. It's more fun to look at upsets.
But the Cardinals aren't playing this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you that.
What happened?
John Walford. He happened.
John Walford happened. Strevler happened. Yes, lots of things happened on Sunday. The losing to the 49ers a week and a half ago. That happened.
C.J. Beathard happened. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. C.J. Beathard. Can't forget about C.J. Beathard.
We cannot.
C.J. Beathard.
I wish we could.
I would really like to forget about C.J. Beathard. Please.
All right. Well, here are
some
the
people
games.
Don't like upsets.
Like who?
People that want the two best teams to end up playing each other do not like upsets. I have several friends that hate upsets because they just want the two best teams to play each other.
I mean, that's true. We don't have any one or two seeds listed here, though. We don't have the Packers or the Chiefs or the Bills or anything like that. Here are the three games that we do have. We have the 5-seed Ravens and the 4-seed Titans, although if you look at the line, the Ravens are actually favored in that one. The 6-seed Browns and the 3-seed Steelers, and then another 6-3, the Rams and the Seahawks. So of those three, which do you think is most likely to result in an upset?
I said the Browns earlier, and I
you change your mind.
Yes, I did.
Because the Browns,
not because of the pressure that you put, but in the spirit of the question, you know, not because of the pressure that you put on me to change it, but in the spirit of the question, if we're really going to consider the Rams beating the Seahawks as an upset, I don't think that that's that much of an upset. But if we're going to count that as an upset, then I will select the Rams over the Seahawks. I could really easily see that happening. Really, really easily see that happening. Whereas the Browns, not so much. The Titans, Ravens, maybe. But the Rams, yes, I could see that happening. So I'm going to change my vote to that one.
I went with the Ravens over the Titans.
Okay. Wow, Burnsy, you went from the most popular selection to the least popular selection by your voters. Why did you do that?
I've never been part of the popular crowd, so why start now?
I walk
Sarah?
Alone. Sure, sure.
Ask all of my high school friends. I was never quite in the popular crowd, so why start now?
Okay, fair enough. It is the Browns and the Steelers leading the pack with 42% of our vote. People think the Browns will beat the Steelers. That is on Sunday. 36% say the Ravens and the Titans, so the Ravens beating the Titans. And then 22% say the Rams beating the Seahawks.
For the record, I don't think Gambo's choice is all that bad either. I could really it's not that hard to see the Titans beating the Ravens at all. Not at the games at home. They've had the Ravens number. They've got Derrick Henry. They've got Ryan Tannehill, who's played really well. I won't be shocked if that happens. Mm-hmm. I think the two things this weekend that would shock me the most, honestly, would be the Bills losing to the Colts and would be the Bears beating the Saints. Those would be the two where I cannot see that under any circumstances. I can't see either one of those things happening.
Yeah.
Those are the two surest things for me. You got one, Gambo, that you think is the surest thing this weekend in the postseason?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah.
Has to be.
Yep. I Bears aren't, they're just not that good.
Yeah. Walter Payton ain't walking through that door.
No. Refrigerator Perry ain't walking through that door.
No.
No, he is not.
Mike Singletary's not walking through that door.
Nope, not at all. Richard Dent is not walking through that door. He does not.
Wilbur Marshall's not walking through that door.
Is this the new Dueling Gambos now? We should just see how many 85 Chicago Bears members we can mention before we get to Jim McMahon. Because actually, Jim McMahon could walk through that door, and it wouldn't help very much because he wasn't
that
good. Phoenix Suns, they're about a half hour away or so from taking on the Detroit Pistons. And a good story today on Bright Side of the Sun about Devin Booker. And the headline kind of speaks for itself. Devin Booker hasn't been himself yet. And that's just fine. And that's the headline from our friends over at Bright Side of the Suns. And it compares statistically the start that Devin Booker is off to this year compared to the numbers that he put up all of last year. Points per game are down. Assists per game are down. True shooting percentage is down, though not by as much as you would have thought. Free throw percentage, way down. 14.5 percentage points from 1 year to the next. Turnovers up, field goal attempts down. And yet I'm not sensing a lot of panic among the fan base for the Suns about the numbers that Devin Booker has put up so far this year.
Because of the wins. Listen, if they were losing basketball games, they'd be like, what the hell's wrong with Booker? Oh, my God. You know, what's wrong with Booker? He was an all-star last year. They went 8-0 in the bubble. He's their best player. He doesn't need to carry him anymore. Not right now. There'll be games when he has to. There will be plenty of games this year in a 72-game season where they need Devin Booker to carry him. And he will. He'll carry them to games. And yeah, I look forward to that first game that we come in where Booker scores 35 points. Like, oh, my God, Booker, they couldn't stop him. Double teams, traps, they couldn't stop him. But there's more of a team now. I mean, seven guys scoring in double figures in the last game. And, you know, their three-point shooting is ridiculous. And, you know, maybe these teams that were very reliant on making sure that Booker didn't beat them are now seeing that, oh, my God, I mean, we can't put all our emphasis on shutting down Devin Booker because Jay Crowder's knocking down six threes and Mikal Bridges is knocking down threes and Cameron Payne's got 10 assists and Chris Paul's got that jump shot. And there's just so many ways that the Suns can beat you right now. So I think we look at if this was 25 games instead of seven or eight, maybe like, oh, man, that's okay. Now, you know, we're a third of the way through the season and Booker's not right. That might be more of an issue. Right now, to me, there's no issue. I think by the time we come back on the air Monday, we'll have seen one of those Devin Booker games, either tonight or tomorrow. I think we'll see one within the next couple. He's right. He's going to break out. You know he's going to because he's too good. He's going to have that breakout game. But the fact that they're 6-2 and they're winning these games without him having to be great, we're not worried about his numbers being down a little bit.
Yeah, and we have this conversation and we make it sound like Booker's been bad somehow. He hasn't been bad. I mean, his numbers are fine. They're just down from what they were a year ago, and they're just not what we expected. Now, I to your point about the whole 7 games, 25 games, make no mistake about it. I mean, the Phoenix Suns, if they really are going to be as good as people think they can be, and if the ceiling is higher than maybe we initially thought at the beginning of the season, they're not going there unless Devin Booker is great, right? Devin Booker, I think eventually for them to truly be one of the elite teams in the Western Conference, Devin Booker has to be great. He's merely been very good so far this year, not great. But he's got plenty of time to get there, and I think probably more so than we can imagine, there's a real challenge for Devin in being so accustomed to having to do everything all the time, every game, to not having to be that guy, and sort of that adjustment not only to his game but kind of inside his own head with how aggressive he needs to be, how assertive he needs to be, how many times he needs to try to take over games and shoot a bunch of shots. Like you said, I would imagine inside his own head, he's kind of trying to figure out the tempo at which he should play given all of these great things that he has around him. And that's probably a really big adjustment for a guy who is used to being by far the very best player on a really bad basketball team. It's going to take him some time to get used to that. It has to.
Well, smart players too. Like he's going to make sure these other guys are coming in here and getting their run too. It's going to make, you know, Devin Booker can't get upset because Jay Crowder is hitting 6 3-pointers in a game. It's helping him win basketball games. Or that Mikal Bridges is hot. Nobody feels this need like, oh, we got to get the ball to Devin. We got to, you know, if Devin, you know, goes a few minutes without taking a shot, he goes a few minutes without taking a shot. He understands the importance of deferring to these guys and making sure that they have an opportunity to be a focal point of the offense as well. But there will come times where those guys are going to have to rely on Devin because Devin is a shot maker. He is a shot maker. He'll get to the free throw line. He'll help you win games that way. He'll knock down threes. So I think that it's, you know, it's very much you've got more guys now that are capable of scoring and that he is not going to get in the way of those guys, you know, having that opportunity to score. And in the end, he knows it's just going to help him because there's going to be tons of games when he's trapped and he's doubled and they're not letting him and he's going to have to rely on his teammates to get him the victory.
One of the very best quarterbacks in the NFL is reportedly not very happy with how his team's doing things this offseason. Does it equate to availability? Is Deshaun Watson available, or will he be at some point? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. This is Cal McNair. He's the CEO of the Houston Texans. This is at today's press conference announcing their new general manager. And he said, look, I understand Deshaun Watson's frustrations. I will talk with Deshaun Watson very soon.
Come to understand that it's been reported that Deshaun feels left out of the process. That he and I had several visits, and I understood his point of view before meeting with candidates. I've reached out to Deshaun about Nick's hire, and I look forward to him getting back to me when he returns from his vacation.
That's Nick Caserio. He's the new general manager of the Houston Texans. I know, but he was referring to Nick Caserio, the new general manager. That was Cal McNair, the CEO of the Houston Texans, who had that soundbite. Do you think at any point because of this that I'm having one of those days.
Cal.
I'm thinking of Deshaun Watson. Do you think at any point that Deshaun Watson will be available to anybody who might want him because of all of this?
Listen, I don't think you ever say it's unlikely that he gets traded. I would never say never because if somebody calls up and they're desperate and they say, look, you know, I'll give you the first pick in the draft. I'll give you the second pick in the draft, and I'll give you a Ricky Williams type trade. Mike Ditka traded his entire draft for Ricky Williams. Herschel Walker trade. That was 6 players and 7 draft picks, I think. 13 players. Somebody is desperate enough to get Deshaun Watson, and you feel like he's not happy and he wants out. You'd be foolish not to listen. I mean, you would be foolish not to listen. I mean, imagine if the Jacksonville Jaguars say, listen, I want Deshaun Watson. I'll give you the number one pick. I could have Trevor Lawrence. And then you're probably giving him something else, too. I can't say no. I mean, I can't say there's no way he's going to get traded. I think it's unlikely he gets traded. But you never know what one desperate team that knows he's a good quarterback and wants him would offer. Maybe somebody offers something and they can't refuse it.
If we were to look at the NFL, and I'm going to do this right now, I bet we could count no fewer than a third of the league that we could argue would want Deshaun Watson. That would look at him and go, oh, yeah, we'd take him, right?
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to be enough to get him out there, but are you going to tell me that the Jets wouldn't want him? You're going to tell me that the Patriots wouldn't want him?
Oh, he's a good quarterback. I like him.
The Jags wouldn't want him, that the Colts wouldn't want him, now that Phillip Rivers is maybe on, the Broncos wouldn't want him. I mean, we could play this game all day and look through it. And every time we've talked about Deshaun Watson this week, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have. Every single time we've talked about Deshaun Watson this week, I get a random tweet from a random listener who says, do you think the Cardinals should trade Kyler Murray for Deshaun Watson? Would you
I've
trade
seen a few of those.
Kyler Murray for Deshaun Watson? And I haven't responded to any of them, but I'll say this to you now and to our audience. I probably would if that's all it cost to get Deshaun Watson from Houston. I think it would cost more than Kyler Murray if you wanted to make a trade with Houston. I think if I were Houston, I would want more than Kyler Murray for Deshaun Watson. And because of that, I'm not so sure I would do it. If it were a straight-up deal, I'd probably do that.
I think I would, too. I like Deshaun Watson a lot. I think he's a very good quarterback. And he's more prototypical size-wise, right? He's 6'2", 6'3". I would probably do it. I have my doubts about Kyler. I like Kyler. I'm not ready to throw him out with the bathwater. I like him. But, I mean, Deshaun Watson's a special, special talent. And he's been in this league for 4 years, and he's proven himself. So I think I would do that. But I agree with you. Like, if it's like, okay, you got to give me, you know, five other picks, then yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah. I just don't think it would be. And first of all, we're talking, and this is what we do on Sports Talk Radio, folks. We're talking an extreme hypothetical here. I don't think this is ever going to come to it. And I'm not down on Kyler or done with Kyler or think Kyler's not the answer. But if you're going to ask me a hypothetical question like that, I'm going to answer in the hypothetical and say, well, Kyler is going to a place that Deshaun Watson is already at. And I don't know for sure that Kyler is going to get there. I think he is. I think it's taking him a little bit longer to get there than I would have hoped, but I still think he's going to get there. I can trade in an unknown quantity for a known quantity, and not an old known quantity. Deshaun Watson's still a young football player with many, many good years left in him. He's under contract. It's all of that stuff. He is at the place we hope Kyler Murray will get to one of these days. Yeah, I would do it if it were straight up one for one trade, but it wouldn't be a straight up one for one trade. You would have to put in, it's like you're talking about, if the Jacksonville Jaguars called and said, hey, we'll give you the number one pick right now for Deshaun Watson, if I'm the Texans, I'm like, yeah, what else? What else are you going to give
right.
me? Because it's going to take right. more than that. Yeah. It's going to take a lot.
No, listen, how happy is he? Does he want out? I mean, is he going to force his way out? I mean, it's a big cap hit right there if they trade him. Huge cap hit. But, you know, maybe you get this opportunity. This is the opportunity now is to trade him and get a boatload for him. There's a lot of stories out there, potential trade packages, landing spots. I mean, the last one I saw was Bleacher Report that talked about, you know, the landing spots for him and what they could possibly get in return. And because these are, you know, and they said the last blockbuster trade involving a starting quarterback saw the Bears acquire Jay Cutler from the Broncos in exchange for two first-round picks and a third-rounder. Okay? They also sent Kyle Orton to Denver and received a fifth. So they got two first-round picks for Jay Cutler.
Reality TV star Jay Cutler? Because God knows he wasn't a quarterback.
No, for Jay Cutler. So, look, you're going to get a boatload for him. There's a lot of teams that would love to have him, and there's a lot of teams that are probably going to watch this situation very closely to see, and then you hope for it to implode. You hope that, oh, that's good. They told him that he could make a decision on the GM, and they didn't. He's pissed. That's great. The more chaos that ensues, the better off it will be for teams, you know, that may want to make it sure the Broncos, the Bears, the Lions, the Colts, the Raiders, the Dolphins maybe, the Patriots for sure. I'm sure the 49ers and the Washington football team would all be in. Maybe even the Saints would be interested. How about the Eagles?
Like, yeah.
You're right, there's 15 teams. And they're all waiting to see what's going to happen here. And he's a good quarterback. Now, it might be a mistake. Maybe they'll make a mistake if they can't figure this out and work this out and he's unhappy. You know, maybe in the end they made a mistake by not trading him. But it's hard when you have a franchise quarterback and you blow it and you got to get rid of the guy. Ugh. I mean, what a disaster that is.
That is a disaster. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show last season, the Suns got off to a very good start. Quite similar, in fact, to the way they've started this season. Why is this year different from last year? We'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo show.